You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis. About a dozen senior citizens are gathering in the living room of a mobile home in Huntington Beach.
What mobile home did you say you're in?
They're meeting because this mobile home park has a new landlord, and the rent is going up this month. Now, they're planning to pay, but they don't think the new amount is fair.
So we are trying to get the city to assist us in helping to protect its senior citizens. You know, supposedly Huntington Beach is the city of compassion, and we're hoping that that will wind up being the case.
Patricia Taylor, whom you heard there, and others gathered here, would like to see the city of Huntington Beach put rent stabilization for mobile homes on the November ballot. Scandia Mobile Country Club was a family-owned mobile home park until last year, when a corporate investor bought it and then raised the rent. That's a trend. It's happening all over Orange County, all over the state of California, and across the country. Rather than just complaining, though, this group has found a potential way to address the situation through the local democratic process. KCRW's Megan Jamerson picks up the story from here.
Carol Rohr imagined a retirement full of world travel and lots of kayaking with friends. Becoming a community advocate, running a campaign out of her living room in Huntington Beach was not on this 65-year-old's bucket list.
I've always kind of volunteered for stuff, but and I've always felt empathy for people who have, you know, suffered in any kind of way. And so, you know, but really have never come close to this kind of thing.
Now she's working 10 to 12-hour days, trying to figure out how to get rent stabilization on the city's November ballot, interpreting city handbooks, canvassing the neighborhood, and meeting with city council members. And she's now president of her mobile home park's homeowners association.
I had no clue when I stepped up for this that it was going to be what it was going to be.
She took all this on when Investment Property Group, a corporate real estate owner, bought Scandia Mobile Country Club in August. Soon after, IPG announced they were increasing rents over the next 3 years to cover a more than tenfold increase in property taxes when the land was transferred to them. Julie Rodriguez, IPG's president of property management, defended the rent increase at a February city council meeting.
The rent increase of $75 does not nearly cover the increase in property taxes at the community, but we kept the increase low in order to ensure every resident can stay in their home.
IPG plans to raise rents by $75 in each of the next 3 years, an 18% increase in Rohr's monthly fees. Meanwhile, new tenant rents are immediately increasing 50% to over $2,100 a month. That rent, by the way, just pays for the land under the mobile home. It doesn't include the cost of buying the home and maintaining it. Rohr thinks the company, which bought the park for $58 million and owns 100 others across the country, is just trying to increase their bottom line for investors.
It was obviously predatory behavior, thinking that they could just buy it up, increase the rents, and cover the new taxes. It's wrong. It's evil.
IPG did not respond to KCRW's requests for comment, but representatives told city council members they are participating in a rental assistance program that offers up to 2 years of rent relief to a limited number of residents. And they said they are investing in the property with things like resurfacing the streets and buying new pool furniture. This all sounds familiar to Patricia Taylor. IPG bought her mobile home park nearby in Huntington Beach 3 years ago. This year, Taylor's rent increased $85 to over $1,500 a month. Taylor, who's in her 80s and lives off Social Security, says she no longer has the budget for simple pleasures like eating out.
I'm very careful about what I spend, and I don't do much entertainment. I don't plan to travel. I can't go places. You know, my income pretty much takes care of necessities, and that's it.
In 2014, she worked on a grassroots campaign that failed to get rent stabilization on Huntington Beach's ballot. Rent stabilization would protect tenants like her from large rent increases, while allowing property owners like IPG to increase rent at a regulated rate. But this time around, there's more sympathy on the city council. And the nearby city of Santa Ana passed a version of rent stabilization last year. Taylor says mobile home residents in Orange County are becoming more outspoken about the issue.
It's just, it's not ethical. It's not fair. It's not reasonable. So, you know, it just, it drives you to action in order to try to get something to assist those people.
The situation at the mobile home parks where Taylor and Rohr live is by no means unique. Large investors are buying up parks all over the country. And according to reporting by Bloomberg News, billions of dollars are being invested into parks, with a record 22% of that money coming from corporate firms. This trend is happening here in California, too. Here's Jerry Rue, a consultant with California Housing Partnership and a tenants' rights advocate.
We have a strong real estate market, a very, very tight housing market. And, you know, investors can make a fairly safe and significant profit by buying mobile home parks in California.
The corporate investors make money by raising rents, says Rue.
That's all they care about. If they can make more money, they'll do it legally, and they'll push the envelope.
That's why Carol Rohr and Patricia Taylor are pushing for rent stabilization in their city. 9 California counties, including Los Angeles, and 86 cities now have some form of rent protection for mobile home tenants. But the pressure is on in places like Huntington Beach, where 6 out of 17 mobile home parks are now corporate owned. That has tenants like Taylor feeling anxious about losing her 2-bedroom home and the flower garden she's grown over the last 12 years.
I love my house, and I don't want to go anyplace else, and I don't want to be forced to because of the situation. And I really do enjoy it. I enjoy where I live, and I have a cat for a companion, and he seems to be very happy there, too.
Remember, tenants like Taylor don't own the land they live on, but they can own their home. And if rents get too high, they could have it moved. But that costs tens of thousands of dollars. Selling is not a great option either, because the homes typically depreciate in value as rents increase. For those who can't afford the higher rent, there is the threat of eviction. Taylor says if her rent keeps going up, she'll try to sell her home and go live with her 90-year-old brother and his wife in Colorado Springs.
I might manage for another 2 years, but after that, I'll have to leave.
Taylor, Carol Rohr, and the others that gather for weekly meetings have until August to get rent stabilization on the ballot. Option one is to gather 29,000 signatures. Option two is to convince the city council to sponsor the ballot initiative themselves. Neither will be easy, says Rohr.
The hardest thing is the pressure of failing. At least 3,000 to 5,000, maybe 6,000 mobile home residents in Huntington Beach, whether they know it or not, are counting on us.
And the work doesn't stop there. Once the measure is on the ballot, Rohr will be leading a campaign to convince a majority of the city's residents to support it. For KCRW, I'm Megan Jamerson.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chitakis. Yeah, it's been a tense and terrifying few weeks for the people of Ukraine, but also for those of Ukrainian descent living right here in Los Angeles.
Right now, people in Ukraine need us, our help. Because right now, in this very moment, fighting in the street where I used to live.
About 26,000 Ukrainian expats have made L.A. County their home. Some grew up under the Soviet regime, speaking Russian, in a country led from Moscow. Others experienced Ukraine as a sovereign state, but always under the shadow of its larger neighbor to the east. Well, now, as Russian forces drop bombs and wage a grim and bloody battle across Ukraine, many Ukrainians who've made their home here in L.A. want their neighbors here to understand what's going on, the context of this war, the ways in which the histories and cultures of the two countries overlap, and how, in the wake of the Soviet collapse, Ukraine became its own independent nation. Rina Atrashenko is originally from Ukraine. She owns Traktir Restaurant, which has a couple of locations in greater L.A. And Irina Vasilkova is the Cultural Diplomacy Program Director at the Ukrainian Arts Center in L.A. as well. And I want to thank you both for coming on and talking to us. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Rina, let me start with you. Like a lot of Ukrainians here, you came to the United States when you were very young, back when Ukraine was still a part of the Soviet Union, and you grew up speaking Russian, right? Your parents as well.
Yes, that is correct. My parents immigrated in 1975 to Los Angeles, and I speak only Russian. I do not speak Ukrainian.
What's the difference between the Russian and Ukrainian languages, by the way? They're both Cyrillic, right?
They are similar, but very different at the same time. I can pick up on some words, but I do not understand the full dialogue, unfortunately.
You and your parents are Ukrainian, but do they and do you think of yourselves as kind of both, in a way, Ukrainian and Russian? Because your restaurant features Ukrainian and Russian food, right?
Yes, that is correct. The first thing you see on the menu in Traktir Restaurant is our Ukrainian borscht when you open up the menu. I always say I am Russian-Ukrainian, and that is only because when I left, that is what it was, is Russia. And Ukrainian is where my city is, Chernivtsi, where I'm from. So I consider myself both.
One of the first things that you think of when you think of Russian food is borscht, right? We were talking about this off air, as a matter of fact. You know, this is the the beet soup. But that's actually a Ukrainian dish. You call it Ukrainian borscht, right?
It is both. Yes, it is. Ours is Ukrainian. It's a little bit different of a spice, or the Ukrainian borscht is a little bit sweeter than the Russian borscht. And like I said, it's, you know, the only thing I liked arguing in Traktir Restaurant is how our borscht is made, that it is more Ukrainian than Russian. That's the only argument, you know, that we used to. But now it's a whole different story.
Now it's a whole different story. What, I mean, you want to talk about that? What is the different story now? And what do you hear and see from customers who come in and talk to you about what's going on in Ukraine?
Well, there's a lot of confusion, but then again, there's a lot of support. I'm very touched by our customers who come in and want to sit and talk, and to our waiters, to the staff. They know us. We've been in the community for over 16 years, you know, and they're very compassionate. We have people from all walks of life, Armenia, Ukraine, Russia, Slavic countries, Americans, of course, and everyone's interested. Everybody wants to help. Everybody wants to know what they can do. We have the TV constantly on Ukrainian news to see what's going on, and try to spread the word that, you know, Ukraine needs help right now.
I want to distinguish between you both. You have very similar names, and Rina Atrashenko, you own the Traktir Restaurant. Irina Vasilkova, you are with the Ukrainian Cultural Center. And Irina, I want to turn to you now and ask you about language. And, you know, you are from Ukraine. Did you grow up speaking Ukrainian or Russian?
Yes, I am Ukrainian. I am a proud Ukrainian. I was born in the Soviet Union while Ukraine was a part of Soviet Union. And by the way, I was born also in Chernivtsi city, like Rina. And my family takes roots from that beautiful land, ensconced at the foot of Carpathian Mountains, free-spirited people. Chernivtsi is famous for being a melting pot of cultures because it's home to so many nationalities and ethnicities who coexisted always peacefully and exchanged their cultures and respected each other. There are Hutsul tribes who speak their dialect of a beautiful Ukrainian language. There are Jewish people. There are Romanian and Moldovians and Hungarians and Austrians and Polish. And we always respected each other, and Ukraine has always been a home place to people who could find shelter and refuge there and who could keep and maintain their cultures intact. And my parents were born in Chernivtsi. My father is a retired military man. He served at certain time when the Soviet Union was still there in air forces of the Soviet Union. But once Ukraine proclaimed independence, he gave vows to serve and defend Ukraine as Ukrainian patriot. And moreover, during Soviet times of oppression, when Russian language was supreme, and when the Soviet Union was the prison of nations, of these 15 Soviet republics, absolutely different countries with their own unique cultures. They were usurped by communists who attempted to merge those nations together under the rule of Kremlin's dictatorship and with the capital in Moscow. And of course, there was cultural appropriation of a lot of those cultures, whatever belonged to cultures like Georgian Harcho or Ukrainian Borscht. The Russians would try to merge it together, take the best of every culture and announce it as Russian. And at the same time, there was a linguicide. While they forbade us to speak our mother tongue, they would create the myth that Ukrainian language doesn't exist as such, as if it's sort of a dialect between Polish and Belarus and Russian, which is a false. I am a linguist. I have a master's degree in linguistics and also a specialist in cultural diplomacy. I can speak in authority that Ukrainian and Russian languages are absolutely different. Yes, they have a basis in Cyrillics, the beautiful scripts of Cyrillic language that brought a lot of Slavic people together. The phenomenon of Slavic language is amazing because Slavic people can understand each other pretty much a lot without interpreter. So just for everyone's information, Ukrainian language and Russian language has a less shared vocabulary than Ukrainian in Belarus or Ukrainian in Polish. So these languages are different. Wow. It's like, you know, it's like saying that Spanish and Italian, the branch of Romanian languages, are the same or would be a dialect of each other. No. The idea of understanding what the language is amazing literature and folklore, which you cannot rewrite. Unfortunately, Russians did burn a lot of literature, amazing Ukrainian literature, and they also exiled a lot of poets and shot them dead, and intelligentsia was exterminated. They tried to do everything to wipe us out from the map. There was also a physical genocide when a lot of Ukrainians were starved to death. And unfortunately, in my family, my great-grandmother's brothers in Zhytomyrshchina were starved to death in Holodomor. And I know a lot of Ukrainians have similar stories. Russians have never acknowledged it as a genocide, while the rest of the world did. We are the nation fighting for cultural, historical identity, and most importantly, for our freedom through the centuries. And it was the happiest day of my country when, on August 24th, 1991, Ukraine proclaimed its independence. And my parents raised me in Ukrainian, regardless of the fact that it was unpopular and it was Ukrainians were put at shame who spoke Ukrainian, but they did it both at home and publicly. And I'm bilingual. I speak both Russian because I went to Russian school. That was the only option in the military town where we lived. There were no Ukrainian schools as such. But yes, I do speak both. And as Rina said, she can pick up some words, but she wouldn't understand a lot, you know. Anyways,
I hear it in your voice, this fierce independence, right? That Ukraine was there before it was annexed into the USSR. It was there, you know, it is there now as a breakaway republic that sought independence, got independence, is its own country. So how do you, you know, when you look at the overlapping history of the two countries, how do you tell people here in the United States who haven't really, I mean, they certainly know about independence. They certainly know, you know, about, I mean, go to the South. You can talk about the Confederacy, you know, and what people, I mean, there's that thought of independence all over the world. How do you explain that to Americans?
Ukraine, through its entire history, which is rich and beautiful and sometimes ugly under oppressions, but it's always been a history for liberation through centuries. Soviet Union was a prison of nations. Don't be fooled when you hear that Ukraine is part of Russia, little Russia. That is not true. This is a horrible lie that Putin is trying to spread to find the reasons for his sick imagination to create a grander Russia. And, you know, we do not carry glorious shared history with former Soviet Union people. There is nothing about it to be nostalgic or sentimental. And what we carry is a painful burden, which we dropped. And this is a tragic, ugly past legacy of suppression and brutal lies. And there's time right now to separate grain from chaff and be vocal and clear about it. Ukraine is an independent, free, sovereign country. For the past 30 years, we embraced it and we were running the race and we were steadfast in following it. And it's our passion, it's our civilizational choice, and we are fighting for it, defending it with our lives.
Rina, getting back to you, are you concerned that the war could result in not just political divisions, but divisions between regular Russians and Ukrainians? You're trying to sort of thread the needle, right? You're trying to serve sort of both cuisines, which happens in many different cultures, right? That there are, you know, yes. As a Greek man, I know that there are many Greek and Turkish mm-hmm. things that overlap, yet the two countries don't much like each other. So I wonder how you do that. Are you concerned about that?
Yes, I am concerned. I know that we need to educate people here now. The people that left the Soviet Union or even Russia and Ukraine came to America for a better life, and they are not the ones that are having, you know, the war with Putin. I think this is Putin's war, and not even some of the Russian people, you know, they are very concerned for Ukraine or stand. Most of the Russian people that come to us are stand with Ukraine and don't want to see this happen. Everyone feels that they are being divided, and, you know, I'm hoping that our culture brings people back together here and does not do that and doesn't divide us. We have to educate the Russian people here to stand up for Ukraine and be loud on social media, wherever they can, on any platform. I've been trying to do the same. I'm looking for ways to donate aid to the refugees. We're working on that right now. So that is what I want to say, as we need to be loud.
Well, I want to thank you both for speaking with us today. Irina Atrashenko, owner of Traktir Restaurant. Irina Vasilkova, Cultural Diplomacy Program Director over at the Ukrainian Art Center in L.A. Thanks to you both, and good luck, and God bless you both.
Thank you.
Thank you. Peace and glory to Ukraine.
Yes.
Peace to the whole world. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode. Tomorrow, the Lakers are having a rough time of it lately, really rough. But remember the golden days, the golden and purple days? Turns out there is a series about it that premieres this weekend. Hear more about Winning Time and the victorious era of the Los Angeles Lakers tomorrow on GLA. Visit us online anytime at kcrw.com/greaterLA. What stories would you like to hear? Go to kcrw.com/greaterLA. Get the podcast, too, while you're there. Or you can grab that podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Andrea Bautista, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Amy Taw, Christine Comito, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all put hard work into this episode. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your ears and time. Take care.